Hi, I'm Tony Riddle, and this is the Nat Life Pod, a platform for conversation to help close the gap between wellness as an industry and wellness as a state of being. Big shout out to this episode's sponsor, XL Coffee. XL are renowned organic coffee producers here in the UK who have gone to extraordinary lengths to ensure their coffee is mold-free and has kept its antioxidant potency. XL are waking up the world of coffee. I'm a big fan and recommend you go give them a try. Use discount code NATLIFEPOD at checkout. Details are in the show notes. This week's episode is with Kate Booker. Kate is a naturopathic nutritional therapist. What I love about this conversation and love about Kate is how she simplifies nutrition and naturopathic medicine. There's so much in this conversation. Simple tools, simple practices to help bring us back to a natural way of living. In no matter what the environment is, Kate's information is going to be a complete game changer for you, as it has been for me and my family and my community. I love Kate. I'm sure you're going to love Kate too. Enjoy the conversation. Okay, Kate, should we start with a bit of woo breathing?
Yeah.
Yeah, ready?
Vagus nerve stimulation to calm
Vegas
us down a little.
Yeah. Stimulation. Maybe we can get to that in a bit. Okay. I better introduce you first, right?
Okay.
Rather than just be us wooing at one another. As nice as it is.
It is very relaxing.
Nice to sit and look in someone's eyes and just go, woo. Imagine all communication started with that.
Yeah. There'd be no shouting.
No rowing, you know? Hold on a minute. Things are getting a bit escalated. Woo.
Yeah.
I was going to argue with you, but now I'm just, it's all done. Kate Booker, a.k.a. Collagen Kate.
How you doing? I got called Gelatin Girl at the weekend.
Gelatin Girl.
Are you Gelatin Girl?
How you doing?
Yeah, no, I'm good, thank you. Sun is shining in Cornwall, can't complain.
It is. Thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
Thanks for arriving.
Thanks for having me.
HQ. How are you finding Kern, California?
Loving it.
Yeah.
Good for the nervous system. Nice and calming.
It's nice when we see your van parked up down at the beach. The kids get ever so excited. I just wanted to thank you for the weekend because we got to experience 100 human experience together, but also Lola and Millie got to experience a fair amount of it and they got to party with you and Kate Casanova, right?
Yeah.
You know? But also, you held space for them so Katerina could come and join breath work and the ice bath.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's nice to have you holding space there.
Well, your kids are a pleasure to be around. And your wife too, Katerina. So. And you, you know, you're not bad either.
But they're all amazing. Yeah, finally. How did you find the weekend?
It was amazing. I feel like I'm still, I mean, it's Thursday now, still coming back down to earth a little bit. 120 people, so many amazing sort of practices, connections, nature, just, yeah, even I didn't do the breath work and the, I did the ice bath, but didn't do the breath work, which everyone said was super powerful. But even without that, the whole weekend, super special.
Yeah, we go quite deep, right?
Really deep. Yeah, you need a few days afterwards just to sort of come back down and take it all in.
Well, I think that there's the element of the community within it, right? So suddenly there's the few days after, there is a feeling of loss because you've had such connection. And then for some, it's maybe just going back into their, you know, into their homes, even on their own, right? And I wanted to speak to community because I think the Nat Life Tribe, for instance, as a community, it's great having people like you in there, you know, that come with such knowledge. And if we look at nutrition and what you offer there and the wisdom you can impart in that group, and it's almost taking it back to how community would be, right? You'd have people within that. And so again, for my girls to be around people with such wealth of knowledge really around nutrition that isn't fad based, You yourself, Kate, the path you're on now, where you are now, to perhaps when Kate had those influences coming in, where you recognize any of that within you, within your own profile of where you're at now, where it's more intuitive, it's tuning into what Kate needs. Like I have a, you know, I eat like a Tony. And then when other people come here, it's sometimes like, I eat like a Tony. And it's, no, you're meant to eat like a you, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, but eat like a Kate before you got to the eat like a Kate.
Mm.
What's the journey there?
Well, it's been a bit of a journey. Quite lucky, my mum's always sort of been, you know, sort of cooked from scratch and emphasis on proper food. So she's given a really good sort of grounding and as children through that. And a few years ago, maybe about 4 years ago, I decided I wanted to be plant-based and went to a nutritionist and sort of wanted to do it properly and was sort of super passionate about it. I was always going to eat eggs. So I was plant-based with eggs because I felt like if you can get eggs from, you know, somebody who has them in their garden and they're eating scraps, I feel like, you know, that's sustainable and nutritious. So I was never fully vegan, but I was really, my aim was to be as plant-based as possible. So I went to the nutritionist and she gave me some good tips on how to do it well. I was sort of watching a lot of the documentaries, believing the hype, really, that anyone can thrive vegan. And if you're not thriving, you're just not doing it well.
Well, there's also the conversation that you're not doing it well. Mm-hmm. So with that nutritionist coming in and supporting that, what was the nutritionist suggesting? What were they?
Well, it was a pretty hefty synthetic multivitamin. And just, you know, lots of greens, eat the rainbow, making sure you're including the protein as well, you know, soaking and sprouting the grains, which is I would recommend everyone to do because we really want to prepare our grains properly and our things like lentils and beans and things. So it was a healthy plant-based diet and I was eating eggs in there as well, but still it went on for about, well, I was like that for about 2 years. But it's funny because I was, throughout that time, I was really craving meat and really wanted to eat it. I would go home and, you know, I'd open my mum's fridge and I was quite the arsehole, really. I was sort of preaching to everyone. I was sharing stuff on social media. But like, mum, meat is inflammatory. I was buying everyone books for Christmas, you know, the How Not to Die book about the studies with how meat is bad. I apologise. Everyone, I apologise for how I was when I was eating like that because I really was pushing it on everybody. So I had to keep watching the slaughter footage and, you know, follow these accounts to stop me from eating the food that really I wanted to eat. And I finally caved after a couple of years and my housemate came home and I was roasting bones that I'd picked up free from the butchers to make some bone broth. And she was like, what's going on? Why does the house smell like meat? And that was kind of my gateway drug to sort of incorporating really good quality animal products back in.
So when we say good quality animal products, we're not just talking about the quality of the meat, but you're also looking at the quality welfare of the animals on the land, right?
Yeah. And regenerative where possible, you know, or organic. I say to people if they're on a budget and they're struggling with money, rather than spend like a £15 chicken is quite a lot, whereas something like some grass-fed mince, which most of the beef in the UK is grass-fed anyway, that's a cheaper option that you can pad out with lots of veg and onions and things like that and make quite a big pot of food for a lot less money. So it's doing the best you can with the budget you've got. But I would always say if you're going to, you know, you can't afford the £15 chicken that's regenerative and organic, then, you know, red meat and things like mince can be more budget friendly.
Mm. So going from preachy Kate to bone broth.
Yeah.
To more meats.
Yeah.
To where you are now. Mm-hmm. How has that impacted you? Where are you noticing it most, I would say? And what were you noticing back then, apart from the desire to eat meat that you were trying to cull by watching documentaries?
So my skin was really, really dry. I was very farty. Mm. that was like instant, really. Once I stopped eating so many, because I was obviously trying to get plenty of protein, but on a plant-based diet, you have to eat a lot of lentils, chickpeas, and if you're into Ayurveda, I'm quite a Vata personality, so I'm quite airy as it is. So those foods just are pretty wind-inducing. So that was the first great thing that stopped. But yeah, my skin was pretty dry. I had some energy low. Yeah, and I was quite a lot skinnier then as well. So yeah, they're the sort of things I noticed. But from a personal point of view, it was very, for my ego to be so sure about something. I never thought I would eat meat again, ever. I was, 100% positive that I wouldn't. And to have me change my mind on something I was so sure has made me think, okay, so if I can change my mind on this, is there any point me getting super passionate about an opinion and getting really wound up by something that I believe? Because in a few years' time, I could change my mind on that. So it's been quite a good lesson to learn to just sort of keep a bit of a cool head. Also be open to other people's opinions. So even whilst I was super passionate about not eating animals, I still followed a couple of nutritionists that were passionate about having a balanced diet. So I kind of was still getting this information along with a lot of the vegan slaughter stuff that actually is to keep...
That wasn't just supporting the my side bias.
Exactly. I think it's really important to do that, to follow people that you disagree with or that have different opinions to you, to really just keep your mind a little bit open. So that was also a good lesson to learn.
Yes, it's looking at... That's when it becomes dogmatic, when you stop listening to anything else out of that field, right? And then we can also stop listening to ourselves within that field, which can be huge signs for some.
Yeah, listen to the instinct. A lot of people get that when they're pregnant as well, don't they? So they're vegetarian for many years and then they're pregnant and then they actually tune in and go, I am really craving red meat, or I'm really craving eggs if they hadn't been eating eggs. And I think it's so important to listen to the body. The body is very wise. We just sort of need to switch off lots of the outside noise and tune in and go, what do I need right now?
There's an element of self-medicating, right? Mm-hmm. Because animals in the animal kingdom have this ability to self-medicate. So it's an amazing image of it's a video actually, of a deer eating a snake. And it had basically torn the skin off the snake to get to the meat. And it's quite common that deer will eat meat. Mm. And I never knew that. I thought they were just purely this herbivorous species, but not. And cows apparently have been known to eat gophers.
Right.
Fascinating, right? And if you look to that, like almost like the evolution of Kate with nutrition, right? So there's the primate diet in there, which is the herbivorous frugivorous, 95% herbivorous frugivorous, which we can call the chimpanzee in the bonobo. And yet they're 5% the animal proteins. So they eat insects, termites, eggs, but they also hunt for monkeys, which is fascinating, right? And then that's, say, at that 29 million years ago. And then at 6 million years ago, there's a divergence between quadrupedal and bipedal apes. And then 2 million years ago, that bipedal ape starts then. We're looking at scavenging for carcasses. So the bone broth is that. It's like the ligaments, the tendons, the marrow of what's left. And then 200,000 years ago, we could then say, the hunter-gatherer, right? And then the hunter-gatherer being this, it also depends on geographic location, but knowing that there isn't a vegan hunter-gatherer.
Mm-hmm. You just reminded me of another thing that I did when I was in that stage.
Don't tell me you ate monkeys.
No, I didn't eat monkeys or snakes, but I did a gene test and that showed I had more hunter-gatherer genes. So I know from testing my genes that I don't convert plant sources of vitamin A, like your carrots, your butternut squash, things like that, into a form that my body can use. So that's why I didn't thrive eating like that. And about 45% of the population have got that similar sort of snip on that gene, which means they're not going to convert very well.
Yeah.
So that's why we see some people do okay for a while and some people just don't do okay. And yeah, so that was another piece that I added into my, okay, so these are my genes. This could be why I'm feeling like this. But yes, they're saying that everyone can thrive vegan, but I'm not thriving. And then these are my genes. So that was another sort of piece of that as I was slowly sort of coming round to the fact that I'd have to apologize to my friends and family for being an asshole.
Yeah. Because beneath it all, I'm a hunter-gatherer.
Exactly.
You know, because so the hunter-gatherer, that's 200,000 years. 10,000 years then that we start farming, right? Mm. And with that farming, it's already then becomes almost the diversity of our diet changes, right? More grain intake, mm-hmm. you know, livestock, even the behavior of the livestock is going to be different within that conversation. And then to where we are today, which we could call that the industrialized diet, really, that came in over the last 100 years, right? So where we are today is more of a process nature. What are the symptoms of that? Look, someone comes to you now as a client, Kate, can you work with me? What are you generally seeing? Is there a similarity in the people that come to see you? Is it?
I'm seeing a lot of digestive issues, things like bloating, diarrhea or constipation. And quite a large part of that is to do with the nervous system. So we find with some clients that once their stress is reduced a little bit, and obviously I'll put things in place to reduce that, like the woo breath, tension trauma release, like stimulating the vagus nerve, really calming the nervous system before we eat. Really digestion starts with, cooking the food, smelling the smells, a calm environment, and then taking a few breaths before we eat and eating mindfully, no screens, chewing properly. Number one tip as well is to not down a pint of water with your meal, keeping liquids to a minimum whilst you're eating. They can help basically us digest the food rather than be in a state of fight or flight. And when we're upregulated in that state, it's very difficult for the body to digest food. So that's why you get lots of these symptoms. But it's interesting to see that when stress is reduced, how a lot of the times digestive symptoms disappear. So that's why it's important. What I do and what nutritionists do is we look at all the systems in the body. I can't just look at someone's digestion and go, okay, let's look at what's going on here without looking at all the other systems that are going on.
So much more holistic approach to it rather than just what's on the plate in a whole, what's happening with the lifestyle that's around the plate.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Exactly. It's not just what we eat, it's everything else. And, if you're eating your dinner and watching the news and it's just quite stressful, that's really not going to help. Your body is thinking that that's actually happening when you're watching something stressful. It doesn't know the difference between, oh, you're just actually just watching TV. It's not real in your environment, so to speak. I'm seeing a lot of that. Hormonal issues as well. It's quite interesting with women that it's amazing, really. We have our periods every month that gives an indication, or our cycles give us an indication of our stress levels, how we've been eating, and that's shown in the period each month with the bleed. So if people are getting sore boobs before their period, or PMS and mood swings, these are all very common symptoms, but they're not really normal. That signifies to me that there's some hormonal imbalance going on. We can measure temperatures, and we want to see a nice shift in temperature around ovulation, just after ovulation, that shows progesterone's nice and high, ready to potentially create a baby. And if we're not seeing that, then we know that there's work to be done to try and balance the hormones. A lot of women are under-eating or under-eating protein. They're fasting and having coffee on an empty stomach, and then they're, rushing to work and have stress at work. Stress is not good for hormones. When you're in a state of stress, the body doesn't really want to make a baby because that's not a safe time.
There's a survival mechanism in place.
Exactly.
From that state could have meant from that hunter-gatherer within Kate, invading tribe, hostile environments. But you're 100% you're not going to bring a baby into, right?
No. So everything is really connected in the body, and that's what's amazing to dive into it all and really take time with clients to see exactly what's going on. Remember in the past when I've gone to the doctors and you've got a 10-minute appointment and you mention one thing and then you say, oh, by the way, I have this too. And they go, no, you're going to have to make another appointment for that. Whereas, what I do is we look at everything. We take our time, even to the point of how were you born? Were you breastfed? All this, because that has implications on your microbiome, which 70% of the immune system's in your gut. So it's all important. So we take a full case history, go through all the systems and really dive deep to get to the root cause of why the symptoms are appearing. Because symptoms are just the body's trying to communicate. So let's see what's actually going on and get to the root cause.
Yeah, and start opening up that communication.
Yeah.
Which then feeds more of that intuition because you're hearing yourself almost within that.
Yeah.
Listening, right?
Yeah.
So the where let's say the protein influencing the hormones, how does the protein influence the hormones in that sense? Because we hear about protein, of course, to get jacked and everything else, and you know, where how's it influencing the hormones?
Well, protein it's used in the body for the building blocks of pretty much everything, so it's important in that regard. But also when it comes to blood sugar balancing, so if we eat carbs, and you know, people think maybe a healthy breakfast would be oats, maybe they don't drink dairy and then they've got oat milk in there and then they have some berries on there for some antioxidants. Sounds good on paper, but they pretty much are all carbohydrates. So we're going to see a big spike in blood sugar, then it's going to drop and you're going to be sort of craving carbs all day or sugary things because you haven't had enough protein. Whereas the one thing that protein does is it slows that spike of the blood sugar spike. So that's why it's really important to make sure that we have protein with every meal and a good sized portion, about a fist. And that will slow the spike of the glucose with the blood sugar. But also, yeah, it pretty much does so many different functions in the body. It's really important.
I remember seeing an image and it was five kind of white-haired, grey-haired dudes. It was a black and white image, but they clearly had white hair. Wearing suits, black ties, white shirts. And they're all like, they're rubbing their hands together and they're laughing. And it says, we've even convinced them to pour cereals over their cereal now, which is oat milk over oats. Because if you soak your oats anyway, you're going to have oat milk from soaking your oats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've all been sort of conned a little bit with cereal, thinking that cereal's a good breakfast. And yeah, it's really not. It's just mostly glucose. You're going to be hungry in a few hours. I mean, I did used to smash the Cocoa Pops when I was a kid and they are delicious. But yeah, that's not going to keep you hungry for long, and it's not going to fuel you with like vitamins and minerals and just, yeah, energy and yeah.
Well, also where the mind goes, because my mum used to work really early in the morning, so she'd leave like silly o'clock, like 5 a.m. My dad, bless him, he'd stay up really late in the evening, so, and had his own business, so he'd go to bed really late and then get up kind of around about the time I guess we'd be thinking about going to school. So we kind of had rule of our own breakfast in a way, and my breakfast usually would involve 3 Weetabix in a bowl and just enough milk to just cover the top of them. And there'd be a bowl of sugar in the middle of the table and I would ladle that stuff on there, right? And years on, of course, now I know it, but at the time, my ability to focus, I was all over the place, like proper jitters and shaking and tapping and all this stuff going on and constantly having to look out the window, lack of focus, lack of concentration. And then you're constantly crashing, right? And to think that's still normalized in a way of what brekkie would be.
Kids are getting labeled at school if it's been disruptive or...
And it can be the food systems, right? And since I kind of went on that path of, right, I cut all the sugars out, I cut all the gluten out. It was the first stages for us, really, many moons ago around Lola time, really, was to then go no gluten, no sugars. And already I could see as a massive shift in my ability to focus and what was being labeled really as ADHD, you know? So to think that that's how much control our plate can have on our mood. So we have like mood foods, don't we? And we can think about that in a really positive term, but actually the negative term of mood foods and what processed foods are doing to us, you know, at that cognitive level, really.
And just all the refined carbs and processed food. And yeah, it is sad to think about those kids that are just all labeled like that, when really if we could get a decent breakfast into them and manage their blood sugar, because it's also stressful on the body to keep having sugar spikes. It increases inflammation. It's not even just the concentration side of things, it's really quite damaging to the body. So yeah, that could be my mission.
Yeah, I think it's a great mission, because we understand now around, you know, autoimmune being, there's predispositions, but there's then what makes that predetermined.
And lifestyle and diet,
right? So, and there's only a certain threshold, and it will get to you one day. Mm-hmm. It will become predetermined if we don't change something within that lifestyle or that diet and step outside what might have been normalized through generations, mm-hmm. even, right? Because we can go, oh, yeah, but my father had this or my mum had this. But yeah, but then you're still perhaps carrying out the same behaviours.
Yeah.
And perhaps eating the same food groups, you know?
100%. Runs in families, but is that diet and lifestyle running in families too? Obviously, the genetic.
Well, like Jeff's saying, it ran through my family until it ran into me, mm-hmm. right?
And it stopped there.
And it stopped there, right? So what you're doing is enabling people to stop it there. It's, you know, it's quite phenomenal work, really. So vagus nerve, unpack the vagus nerve a bit, because we started with some woo breath, right?
So yeah, the vagus nerve is the longest nerve in the body, and it goes from the head down to the gut, and it communicates up and down. So it's sort of affecting all the organs here. It's affecting digestion, obviously going up to the brain as well. So by stimulating it, we can try and calm the nervous system and get into more of that rest and digest rather than fight or flight. So if I've had a really busy day at work and then we're rushing back and then we just grab some food and just gobble it down, then your body hasn't had, it's still in fight or flight and it hasn't really had chance to get into the rest and digest. So it's not going to absorb the nutrients properly. You might end up bloating, you might have diarrhea, you might just, yeah, it's sort of sitting heavy in your stomach and then you go to sleep and you're really not making the most out of that food. So by stimulating the vagus nerve, it really just calms things down. You're going to optimize digestion by doing that.
Which then optimizes the other systems, like hormonal systems, right?
You can sleep better. That's a really nice breath to do if you can't sleep. Or I sometimes do it when I'm driving, if the driving is a little bit stressful. I mean, I'm driving a big van, so sometimes I just do the woo breath and it's just calming. Before sleep as well. So to be honest, I'm putting that on a lot of client plans at the moment because the nervous system is so key to everything, to hormones and to digestion. So everyone can benefit from tapping into that throughout the day.
Yeah, it really speaks to, it's just not enough to clean up one's diet, mm-hmm. right? I featured this in the book around this kind of Maslow's hierarchy of needs around food, right? And yet, in that time period, of course, it was very different to where we are now. But if you applied nature to that pyramid, right, the fundamental mm-hmm. need being food, and you then look to perhaps the indigenous cultures who really are like at one with the food systems in a down-regulated state, as in rest and digest, parasympathetic nervous system, without doing the woo breath, mm-hmm. because they're in that already, yet their digestive system is always being primed, mm-hmm. right? So then they're eating something that is nature. It's from their environment. They have a complete relationship to it. Therefore, and their digestion is primed. Therefore, it's maximum absorption, right? That's getting a food need met versus I'm upregulated in the morning. I've had a coffee. First thing, right? I've then run to the tube station, and on my way from the next tube stop to the office, perhaps I stop by a whatever coffee mm-hmm. shop, and the coffee shop is geared up to put all the lovely sweet treats right by the check-in. So I grab something from there and my coffee, and I wolf it down, and then I get into work. They're both eating food, mm. but which one then gets the food need met? And when we talk about food as a need, it's not just the food, right? Mm-hmm. It's the relationship to it and the relationship that that food has with us, and then that relationship, what we've absorbed then has with those other systems that we've talked about, right?
Yeah.
So it's the question of who gets their needs met. And I think, again, that's why it's so important, this work, Kate, that you do, is because it's enabling people to then access, well, how do I really, truly get that need met mm-hmm. as an individual, you know, because that's the power of it.
Yeah.
It's different to, you know, years ago where we kind of, you know, people almost handed over responsibility, right? You know, two systems. This is about giving that responsibility back in a way. That's
exactly.
What I love about it.
Give people the tools to be able to eat how they should eat. eat as Tony eats or Kate eats, you know. It's...
Yeah, or as Simon here, right? Yeah. How do you get to that point where you eat like a Tony, a Kate and a Simon? Mm. So what are the other tools? Because I love the testing. I love the idea about microbiome and stuff like that, because again, it does help us get to a position where perhaps we understand better what we need. So what do you think about the testing that can be done now? Where's that at? You know, what's the progress that's being made within that, and how do you use that within your own practice?
Well, the microbiome testing is fascinating. I do quite a lot of stool tests with clients. So yeah, that can give us a lot of information, like the immune cells in the gut, how much stomach acid they have, and the pancreatic enzymes, which mean, you know, how well they're going to be digesting their food. You can build quite a good picture once you've taken a case as well. If someone's stressed and then you see that there's low stomach acid, then you know that digestion and absorption is going to be a little bit compromised. We can see the beneficial bacteria, and even some, you know, you can tell when someone's been breastfed or not from looking at their poo, even if they're a 40-year-old. Not that I actually look at the poo, but, you know, the company do that. You can also pick up parasites, fungal infections, H. pylori, things like that. So you can get a lot of information from a stool test, and it allows us to sort of, we test and not guess, so we can really see what's going on. We can be specific about what we're putting in.
Mm, individual specific.
Exactly, yeah. So love that stool test, but also the same company have other, because we have microbiomes everywhere. We have an oral microbiome, we have vaginal, urinary. So, you know, if someone's getting a lot of UTIs or urine infections, then it can be beneficial to be like, okay, let's see what's going on there. Or, you know, for fertility clients, then the vaginal microbiome, that's somewhere we don't want to see loads of variety like we do in the gut. We want it nice and acidic, and, you know, not loads of different bacteria in there. So that can be really helpful to see what's going on as well. So love the microbiome stuff. Also, there's hormonal tests that show you how you're processing your estrogen. So that's good for like a truly preventative sort of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, that sort of thing, is to early on, you can see which, there's three different pathways that estrogen gets pushed down. One of them's like the green light, one of them's the amber, you know, you don't want too much down there, and one of them's the red light. So if you see someone's really pushing a lot down that red, which you don't want, then you can put things in place through food and lifestyle and supplements to try and get it going down the amber and the green, as a truly preventative medicine, which is what, you know, nutritionists are all about, really. Let's not wait until somebody gets cancer. Let's actually do what we can to bring hormones into balance and prevent that from happening. So yeah, also love that test. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of tests. The hair mineral test can be quite interesting to show mineral balance for the last 3 months.
Yeah, because it's over a longer period of time. That's key. Yeah, that's a key there, because I started to kind of look at the testing, like blood work and stuff like that, because let's say Kate spent a whole day doing Woo Breath, you know, and you're like chilled out mofo, and you have testing done, versus Kate's going to go into London. Mm-hmm. You're going tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you don't focus on Woo Breath, and you're not down regulating whilst walking around and watching the hyperlapse of it. You're actually in the hyperlapse. Mm-hmm. How does that then affect one's blood work in that moment?
100%. I've ran a couple of experiments myself, going to the doctors, getting my thyroid checked, you know, in the afternoon versus doing a private panel at home first thing in the morning, fasted, and they're two quite different results on a few days apart. So this is why it's a little bit frustrating with, you know, people go to the doctors and then they say, oh, your results are fine, but they're just checking two markers, and that those thyroid markers might have been taken in the afternoon. Mm. But actually, when you retest that in the morning and you look at, there's multiple other markers you can check, and their thyroid isn't fine. Or you can, you know, measuring temperature is quite a simple way to give a little bit of an indication of how the thyroid is doing as well. So I tend to get a lot of my clients to do that as well, because, you know, there's things like, at the moment, big push to get everybody onto statins and, you know, saying everyone's got high cholesterol. But then, well, let's see what's going on with the thyroid. If the thyroid is slightly low or suboptimal, then that's going to have an effect on cholesterol. So yeah, I did try and have this discussion with my GP, but I left very red-faced. So yeah, it's a tricky one. There's a lot of testing can be done, but ultimately it's listening to people's symptoms. A lot of people go to the doctors and then they say that they're fine, but they don't feel fine. So then what happens? You know, let's listen to people. If they're saying they're not fine, then let's really get to the bottom of what's going on, not just do a blood test. And because the thing with blood tests as well, the body is always trying to keep it in balance. So it just tells you what's going on right in that moment in the blood, but what's going on in the tissues, what's going on with the genes. Do they have an increased need because of their genetics? So that's why it's important to look at the full picture and really zoom out. I'm basically a detective. See what's going on.
So the hair testing, that gives you a more...
Yeah, it can indicate what's going on when you look at the ratios, what's going on with the ratios between minerals, what's going on sort of with the thyroid, with the adrenals. But it's important to look at it as the whole picture. Like, I wouldn't just look at a hair test, hair mineral test. We need to look what are your symptoms, what's been going on, and sort of piece everything together and build a picture. So, but yeah, I do like that test. That's 3 months, what's going on in the tissues, what's been pushed out. And you can pick up heavy metals and things on there as well. Things like aluminium and other heavy metals as well, which obviously we don't really want high in the body. So yeah, there's lots of testing to be done. And there's even organic acids tests, which shows, you know, how you're creating energy and your mitochondria. So yeah, there's loads of testing to be done. But yeah, ultimately you just take your time and look through everything and really try and understand what's going on in the body.
I think it's key today. I think it really is, because it's there. And again, it helps build that intuition of what I need, because you can strip out the stuff that actually is disruptive in a way to our system.
Yeah.
You know, I found with the microbiome test, the stool sample that I sent one off, and it's actually surprising, you get it back and you go, wow, these are the food groups that I need to remove. Mm-hmm. These are the food groups I need to minimize. These are the groups I can have every day. And these are my superfoods.
Yeah.
I had that kind of profile. But also what's in there, because we hear a lot about probiotics and prebiotics and things like that, but very rarely do we have, there's a specific probiotics that would help the symbiotic relationship within my gut.
Yeah.
And there could be other probiotics, because I don't know what the microbiome is in my gut, because I haven't had a stool sample, could then lead to further dysbiosis within my gut.
Yeah. You
know? So it's so individual specific, you know? And why is that? How does that happen? Well, because again, the environmental impact of it as well, right? And we've had that, as you said, that whether there's been breastfed, you know.
That early start is, yeah.
How clinical that early start has been.
Exactly. Because obviously breast milk is not sterile, and you know how babies come into the world, you know, that first moment as it comes through the birth canal, that's where it picks up the microbiome, and that's where it starts off. And then hopefully if they're breastfed, then you know that's adding more goodness into the microbiome. And then, you know, playing in dirt and or being outside, just been out in nature, puppies can be really beneficial for the microbiome as well around kids. You know, thinking about that, we've got chlorine in tap water, and if we're drinking a lot of chlorine and cooking with it, then what impact does that have on the microbiome? If we're using antiseptic everything, you know, cleaning around toys and where kids are playing and anti-backing everything, what does that do to a kid's microbiome? And therefore, think about this huge increase in allergies over the past, well, since I was in school, you know, 15, 20 years ago, there was a lot less allergies, and now that it's an explosion of allergies. So I think hopefully we will come back round a little bit and realize that dirt and not sanitizing things is not going to harm us, and actually beneficial for kids to have exposure to really train their immune system, so they know, okay, that's okay, we're safe.
Yeah, and if anyone's having trouble with that, there's a great study. It's in my book around the nurseries, the kindergartens in Finland, right? And they take a group, it's a number of kindergartens, right? Yeah. And they rewild the playground. So they bring in forest floors and plant boxes for the kids to get their hands in and get involved with planting. And within a short window of time, it was like a 28-day study, right? And they see a huge shift in T cells and gut and skin microbiome, you know, in that very short window of time.
Yeah.
And then it demonstrates really from a biodiversity perspective how important that is.
Yeah.
And we, again, I grew up in quite a sterile environment. My mum was obsessed by cleaning. And so you're going from literally one linear square box, which doesn't have any sensory kind of biodiversity even, you know,
I love that forest study. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, which is from, again, one linear box then to the next linear box. And then if we're only ever going there to the car and then to an office space that, again, is a linear box, it's...
Or a school where they're sanitising everything.
But we often just think of this because the kids' studies are what really show up and they're the ones that we seem to pay more attention to. But really, it's us adults as well, right? Again, need to rewild our own kind of everyday environments to get our own skin in and our own senses open to. Because not only that, does that improve our skin and gut bacteria and our T cells, but it also means that we create the right templates for then the younger ones to observe and go, oh, this is normal, rather than what can be the obsession over cleaning, you know, this level of cleanliness that's clearly leading to a dysbiosis, right?
Yeah. Well, there was that study, I think it was in Japan, actually, and they had about 1 hour in a forest and they measured their white blood cells before and then afterwards. And for a week after being in 1 hour in the forest, their immune cells were still raised and up. So it's protective for them. So it's like nature has the answers. We just need to connect back with nature and making sure that we're outside every day, feet on the earth, hands on the dirt, you know, just open the windows, you know, we just embrace nature.
Yeah, there was something that you presented on the NatLife Coach course on the Evolution Day, on the Evolve Day around nutrition. It was a friend of yours. Do you mind talking about her on here? Will she mind you talking about her?
I don't think she'll mind.
Okay. Who was trying to get pregnant, right? Mm-hmm. Because again, it's a really powerful story and it's individual specific again as to her needs, right? Not to say this is everyone, but this, in her particular case, this is something quite powerful to share, right?
So it's like what I was saying before about the thyroid and the temperature, that can be a good indication of what's going on in the body. So
but this is like this has actually happened for her, right?
Yeah, so she was trying for a while to get pregnant and nothing was happening, and slowly sort of increased her temperature by eating more protein, good quality protein, more wild fish. So think about the minerals that the thyroid loves: selenium, iodine, zinc. These are highest in animal foods and plant foods. So not animal foods and fish. So she was sort of making sure she was eating plenty of protein with each meal and these nutrient dense foods, and slowly and slowly her temperature was going up. And then now she's got pregnant. So it was just nice to see that journey of, you know, I guess she was also vegetarian like me as well. So to go on that journey of that, these foods can be very healing. And some people do just need these foods regardless of what's been pushed with, you know, everyone can thrive vegan or vegetarian. Not everybody can.
Yeah, I guess the same could be, you know, everyone can thrive on a whatever you want to put at the end of that with
like
diet.
Like carnivore.
You know, again,
I don't think I'd do well carnivore. I do love plants.
I think it's that, again, it's just remove the dogma because and the labeling, because it removes the level of intuition that we can develop and understand food as medicine, as the rest of the animals in the animal kingdom seem to be able to kind of navigate that path quite well. And it also creates more stress.
Yeah.
Because if I'm not listening to my body and my body saying, look, Tony, we really need this right now. We really need this right now. And I'm ignoring it. That has to have an effect of stress on my organism, right? And again, I can do all the woo breath and the down regulation, but I'm still not listening, you know? And I think it's so important to tune in. For many of you that know, I've now some special hair just again by I think was tuning in more. I started to see, and largely it took me a bit of time to listen because I put it down to, I'm 48 now, right? So I put it down to the fact I was mid-40s, right? And my hair started really thin on top, and then it started to bald on top, and then I just, you know, it was getting to the point where it's just aging. And I was so heavily plant-based at that time, but all the endurance work. So I too was really going down that path of nutrition. It wasn't like I was just eating whatever to support a plant-based diet. I was really kind of knew my stuff because I was having to supplement to a degree for the endurance work. And then I started to see other things like fatigue and, you know, erections and stuff like that in the morning. I just put it down to, maybe it's just my testosterone's low because I'm reaching a certain age. And then you start to then pick up on, well, hang on a minute, because when the studies suggest in nature, these indigenous cultures, that you've got men in their 60s that still have the same level of testosterone they had in their 30s, what's going on? And of course, the environment plays its role in that, but what's the deeper message here? And so I was already eating wild meats, and I think your advice around what was collagen and bone broth, which I could then check in with this evolution of the human diet, I would say I was more primate, you know, 95% plant-based, herbivorous, frugivorous, plants and fruits. And then I'd have eggs, and, you know, I'd support it that way. But then really supplemented powders for this, and powders for that. And, you know, how sustainable is that really? And where's that being shipped from? And what's the packaging involved in that to support that? And yet still hair thinning. And then once I started to introduce bone broth already, it was almost a mechanism of healing the gut, I would say already. And then that call for wild meats, where I was having like 5% animal proteins, was in that herbivorous, frugivorous, was wild meat in there, not just eggs, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I started to introduce more wild meats and more wild meats.
And the hair grew back.
And my fucking hair grew back, you know? Mm-hmm. And even my mum's like, Tony, how does that happen? I said, well, it didn't make sense, mum, because no one in our family's bald.
Mm-hmm.
And my mum's one of eight, and it comes from your mum's line, right? And so how is it that I'm bald? What's going on? And so, yeah, I think once I started to really tune into it, it took a bit of time though. It took a bit of time because, again, I think I was more wrapped up in the environmental impact of it.
Yeah, I was too.
And it really struck a chord so deep. And with the kids, I just said, Katherine, we need to be doing more with this. But then I started to build relationships, which I think was coming in at the right time, like Isabella Tree from the Nep Estate. And Isabella was like, yeah, Tony, it's, you know, you've got to look at the wild animals that we have roaming on our land, right? It's a huge part that they play in the biodiversity, but it's also a huge part that we have to play in that biodiversity. So the longhorn cows they've got, they're really ancient breeds. Mm-hmm. There's no veterinary care, right? And they can just roam over the land. They're rewilding this whole estate. And the animals will, as in self-medicating, eat what they need to eat. And their saliva speeds up the process of how that plant grows. And the plant, of course, lays down sugars into the soil to then encourage the soil to give the plant what it needs to feed the animal. And yet, if they have too many of those roaming breeds, what it does is the ruminating animals will literally gnaw through everything. And then you don't have any biodiversity, right? And then if you have too little, the canopy grows back too vast. And again, that affects the biodiversity. Mm-hmm. Like when we moved in here, it's like brambles everywhere and there was nothing getting through. And then Tom came, Tree Tom, and Tom cleared so much of it. And we've got this amazing ferns popping up, beautiful kind of biodiversity, right? So with her story, it was like, well, Tony, we don't have the apex predators to work the numbers of the breeds on our land. And yet we want to rewild the land, so we have to come in with intervention there. And that means then selling wild meats.
And can you get more sustainable than that, really?
I know. And then that was a really healing story for me. It helped me then reconnect to that, you know, as in our part within this understanding of biodiversity, right, and how we heal that. But again, I wouldn't go anywhere near, because of that understanding and that sympathetic symbiosis, that subtleties of those relationships and how sophisticated mm-hmm. those, lots of S's there, sophisticated those systems are, that I wouldn't go near the factory farming mm-hmm. and what feels like very abusive to those systems. And so much so that, you know, I'm going to reference my book again, Be More Human, that it was like, if there were two people at this table right now, and it's like, and there's a vegan one side and a carnivore the other side, it's like really understanding the systems. It's like, you know, if you're going to eat meats, then don't eat meats that are depressed coming from depressed animals fed on antibiotics and monocrop mm-hmm. that's full of pesticides. And yet if you're not choosing to eat meats, again, because of your choices, don't become the depressed animal mm-hmm. that's also fed on antibiotics and monocrop and pesticides, right? It's like really just helped me really refine that message, and that understanding was to tune in and make better connections, I guess, to the food systems. And I think that's where we're a little bit lost right now.
Yeah. I don't think we can, they sort of, in all the studies, they group meat eaters versus vegetarians or whatever, or vegans. But yeah. It's like we can't, there's very different diets within those categories that are so, so different that we can't just, there's not just three categories. We need to think about what people are eating, their lifestyle. You know, how can these studies come to conclusions without looking at the whole picture? And this can be the problem a little bit with studies sometimes, that it's just, you know, you can't just group people into three groups and then make a conclusion. But that's what we tend to read in the papers when they say eggs are bad or eggs aren't, you know, eggs are great. You know, this is what confuses people.
And creates huge division.
Yeah.
Right. And then it gets abusive mm-hmm. even, right?
Yeah.
You know, which creates more stress, which then disables our ability to absorb the very foods that perhaps we have so much care and attention for. Right?
Yeah.
You know?
So that's why it's good to be able to help people to cut through the BS and see what they need and what their body wants.
Also, I just admire you for kind of, you know, really committing to that, because it could be so much easier for you in a way to present or feed into a narrative, right? Mm.
Always been a bit of a rebel though, so.
Where does that come into? Where did that first, where's your first memory of Kate Gelatine Girl Rebel?
Well, when I think I was about six and I came home from school and I burst into tears and I told my mum that there was a kid getting bullied, and the kids basically said, if you walk on the mat, then you get the guy's name's disease. And I walked over the mat, and I walked straight over the mat, and I told them off, and I said, look, if you don't stop, I'm going to tell the teachers on you. And I felt really bad for this guy getting bullied. So I quite happily be the only person in a room disagreeing with everyone. It kind of lights a fire in my belly. If I feel so passionate about something, I don't really mind to be the only person thinking that way. So I guess that's a strength. But then sometimes in the past, it's got me into a couple of arguments sometimes. But yeah, so that's kind of, I guess, my personality. I always thought I wanted to teach throughout all primary school and throughout all secondary school, but I wanted to make the most difference by, I wanted to teach in a really deprived area. So I did quite a few interesting work experiences. I was like, where is like the most deprived areas in the UK? So I went to Birkenhead, and then I went to Little London in Leeds. And in this school, there was 52 different languages spoken. It was a really deprived area. Kids straight from Afghanistan into year six, not a word of English. And that was more focused on supporting the brothers and sisters and them to sort of, not even about educating them. It's like, how can you emotionally process, help these kids? Yeah. So that was amazing.
What they've been through, right?
Yeah. So I always thought I wanted to teach, and because I wanted to help people, but then I had a last minute change to like a creative route when I was 18. But about 4 years ago now, I did a Vedic meditation course, which is mantra based and similar to transcendental meditation. And they said, oh, by the way, just warn your housemates or your partners or whatever that, you know, things can be rocky for a few weeks whilst you sort of recalibrate. And I had a rocky few days, but then within about 2 weeks, I just decided I needed to retrain, and I really wanted to go down this path and be a nutritional therapist to help people. And it's something I was really passionate about. So I just sort of moved quick, went with a gut instinct, signed up to do a 3-year course, and the rest is history. So yeah, it just felt really right for me. I think my mum's given me and my sister really good foundations in food, and you know, quite holistic. But then also she had a foot in the holistic door, but a foot in more of the mainstream door. She was a midwife and a health visitor, so she kind of, yeah. My cousins used to call her the health freak, but I think she's passed the baton on to me. I'm always getting teased because I've got some remedy or some magnesium for somebody. But yeah, I quite like that. I think that, yeah, it's nice to be able to share that with people. Like at the 100 Human in last June, when you needed some Bree Propolis throat spray because you could hardly speak. So
Yeah.
So I love it. I feel like it's just what I was born to do. It just took me a few years to figure it out, but all part of the journey. from being the person that was, you know, encouraging people to not eat meat and be like, dairy is scary, you know, meat is inflammatory, you're going to get cancer if you eat meat. That was me a few years ago. And now I realize the importance of these nourishing foods, you know, things like bone broth, gelatin for the gut can be so healing. I have a couple of friends that, one, her son has quite bad eczema, and she bought the gelatin to make the gelatin gummies, because I always have gelatin gummies recipes I'm sharing on my Instagram. And
well, this is a joint friend, right? Are we talking about?
Yeah, joint friend. Yeah. Okay, and okay, now I know. So she tried to make the gummies, but her kid wouldn't eat them. So she just started sneaking the gelatin into his porridge. And then his eczema just really got so much better. And she was
in a very short window of time.
She's like, it's the only difference I've made. And the lady that stopped me at the weekend at the 100 Human said her friend wanted to tell me that her skin has got so soft, like the inner tube of a bike wheel. So I was like, that is quite soft. So since the gelatin's been introduced. So yeah, I think these foods can be so nourishing, and I'm quite passionate about getting people, you know, eating nose to tail, eating the whole animal, and that from a sustainability point of view as well. You know, we don't just want to be eating the chicken breast. We want to eat the whole animal and make use of everything. So
the gelatin, you were making gelatin sweets with the kids.
Yeah.
Which they're loving, you know. Our kids don't normally have sweets, so it's nice them to have something that, you know, looks like a sweet at least.
Even though it's not very sweet at all.
Well, to them it is, because they don't really have sugars, right? Yeah. So for them it is. So where can we find recipes like that, Kate?
So you can find them on my Instagram, Kate_holistic_health.
Yep.
At some point I will have them on my website, but my website's very basic at the moment. But
what's the website? Even if it's basic, let people find you.
KateHolisticHealth.com. But it will be getting better. That's my goal for the year. But
which we'll put in the show notes as well, right?
But yeah, there'll be more recipes coming all the time, basically. Love to experiment. I love to like intuitively cook. I think it's funny how everyone has a different way of cooking. But yeah, I just start cooking and I don't even know what I'm going to make, and then throw things in and then it just changes into something else. And that's when you come up with the best recipes. But it's harder for me to share them then because I have no idea what I put them in.
I'm very much like that. Catherine is much more system based with what she's done. She can easily put recipes together, and I'm sure there's going to be a cookbook coming soon because she's amazing at that. But for me, it's like, oh, I just try a little bit of this and a little bit of that, you know. And I bring that accent on as well because I feel like Ratatouille comes in for a moment. I've just been looking at my matcha, and I wanted to talk coffee with you because only recently I've been dabbling with a bit of coffee.
Yeah, well, quality matters. So
because in the past, I just found I turned into an upregulated mess. Mm-hmm. But you brought along, I think it was at the Dunford, Bantham.
In June, yeah.
Bantham 100 Human Experience. And you're involved with XL Coffee, right? Alex is XL Coffee. And you rocked up with some of that, and I tried some there, and I felt good on it. I think it was a great cup of coffee.
So coffee is one of the most sprayed food, it's the most sprayed food crop in the world of pesticides and fungicides and things. So organic is a must. If you can drink coffee, always make it organic. And also it's a very moldy crop. It's kind of a bit like peanut butter. It's very easy for the coffee to get moldy. So you want to make sure it's fresh and it's not sitting in a bag for a couple of years. Coffee. I was also a bit like you in the past. Back when I lived in London, I would have coffee on an empty stomach and then, you know, go on a Zoom call at 11 o'clock and my boss would be like, Kate, I really don't think you should drink coffee. But what I realized is if you eat a decent meal with plenty of protein, a nice balanced breakfast, and then have coffee, that, you know,
in the order of things,
exactly,
then it balances.
You don't want to put your foot on the gas, so to speak, with nothing in the tank. And that's kind of what happens. You fasted all night and you get up in the morning and people chug a load of coffee and rush to work. That's really not good for the adrenals, and you're going to get a big spike in cortisol. But actually, if you're, you know, eating first or not in a stressed state, I mean, everyone's different. Some people do fine, men especially. I would say to women, I wouldn't be recommending women to drink coffee on an empty stomach, but men seem to do better. But yeah, the good thing about Exhale is it's sort of, Al is very passionate about coffee. And I mean, he would do a much better
job.
He's
a coffee connoisseur.
He loves it. Yeah. But he basically found, He gets beans from all over the world that are organic and then tests them to see which one is the highest in the polyphenols, which are the antioxidants. And then they roast the coffee in a way to retain more of the benefits. So they don't over roast it and burn it. They're trying to keep all that goodness in there. So one cup is equivalent to 12 punnets of blueberries worth of antioxidants. So
say it again.
One cup is equivalent of coffee is equivalent to 12 punnets of blueberries worth of antioxidants, or 55 oranges. So it's quite a medicinal brew, really. But yeah, they do. I mean, I'm on their decaf at the moment for a couple of weeks, just calming the nervous system down. And
still getting all the benefits, exactly, of the polyphenols and the 12 punnets of blueberries.
And the thing with decaf, you need to make sure that a lot of decaf, they just add a solvent to the beans to get rid of the caffeine.
Oh, it's so valuable, this, Kate.
I love coffee. But yeah, you want to make sure that it's water extraction or CO2 extraction. So always check if you can drink decaf.
What's Alex do? What does he do?
They did a spring water extraction, but I think they've switched to CO2.
Okay.
But just not solvent.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's quality matters.
It seems like it's blowing up for them because it's, you know, I think when you put that much detailed dedication into it. Mm.
He's so passionate. I would recommend listening to one of his podcasts. He geeks out into all the science behind it, the benefits of coffee. Because, I mean, people like to poo-poo coffee a little bit, don't they, and say that it's bad, you know, the stress response and things. But there's actually quite a lot of studies showing the benefits
for
the
brain,
microbiome. Yeah, the polyphenols, prebiotics. So yeah, there's lots of goodness in there. I know I'm a bit sad. I need to maybe get out more, but I do sometimes go to bed and then get a little wave of excitement for my morning coffee. But I like put a bit of cream in there, a bit of collagen, sometimes a little bit of honey if I'm feeling, you know.
Yes, yeah, again, looking at it like a nourishing drink then.
Exactly.
Right?
And it feels amazing.
That changes it rather than looking at it, oh, I'm going to get this because it's like rocket fuel and that's what I'm drinking it. It's actually thinking about being this nourishing brew that has many benefits in that sense. That's what's flipped it for me. Mm-hmm. Especially, I mean, talking to people like you, right, around coffee. Do we know what the nine? Do I need to get Alex on? What are the nine independent tests? Because I heard he had nine independent tests.
I'm not sure.
Because I think they were all mold tests.
Oh, they do mold tests, and then all the antioxidants, see the polyphenols a lot of the times, and then the caffeine as well. But a lot of the times, they just really burn the beans. There's no polyphenols really left in there. So that's why it's a lighter roast. So the dark-ish is called, instead of being a dark roast, it's dark-ish because it's not super, super dark. So for some people, they'll try it and think, it's not...
Not stronger.
Not as dark as they want, those nice burnt beans.
That rich.
Yeah,
kind of.
Yeah. So it's the fine line, and that's what he's tried to do because, you know, Alex has been on his own journey with autoimmunity and, you know, healing himself through diet and lifestyle and... Yeah, so that's like a big part of his journey. So he's an inspiring guy.
I'll get him on. Here. We should get him on. I think we should go and have a coffee now, right?
Decaf this time of day.
2:30. Yeah, definitely. Kate, absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. I'm seeing you again in a couple of weeks. We've got the next round of NatLife Coach certifications coming in.
I'm excited for that.
Looking forward to your day.
Last time was like a 5-day therapy session. It was amazing.
You know, that's the amazing thing, isn't it? Even as the facilitators and coaches, there's so much work there, you know, and some of it's quite deep, of course.
Yeah.
But I was saying, they asked me about the coaching cert and said, oh, you know, is it only for coaches? I thought, are you kidding me? It's like, I'd go to it because you've almost got retreat standard stuff going on. And then... You don't need to be a coach, but you're around all these practices and then around some amazing beings. There's, again, a sense of community. And yet there's also this such a wealth of knowledge there, right?
So no, it was amazing. There was so much. So even me, you know, I'm not just going to turn upon the day. This time round, I've done it all once before, but I'm going to do it all again.
You're going to be here for the whole weekend. Jeff's coming as well. Yeah. Jeff's flying over from Portugal. He's going to be here the whole time. Alice will be here the whole time. Kieran's going to be here the whole time. Rather than just their day that
there's
they're
no
actually
dipping
facilitating.
In and out. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like it's, again, growing into something quite magical.
Well, Jeff's cacao ceremonies, oh my gosh, the one at the weekend, just amazing. I don't know how he does it. He's a magician.
He is a magician.
Yeah. He's a lot of gratitude for that guy.
Yeah, a lot of love for that guy. Mm-hmm. Well, he is the cacao bear, right?
He is the cacao bear.
If you work with cacao, you've got to have a lot of love, right? Mm-hmm. I believe it's in the stirring.
Right, okay.
You know, he's setting intentions while he stirs the pot.
Yeah.
putting a lot of love in mm-hmm. at that moment. And that certainly, ripples of that are felt
yep.
in every sip. Also, though, with the cacao, because it's funny, isn't it? When I just thought I'd unpack this, because if you haven't been to a cacao ceremony yet, when you first, I will forewarn you, so when you first get poured the cup, your mind's perception is probably hot chocolate.
Cadbury's.
And it really isn't like that, because it shouldn't really amuse me. It does amuse me. It amuses me. So we've got like 120 people in a circle in this case, and there's a large number of those that haven't drank, just sat in a circle mm-hmm. of that ceremony or drank cacao before. And there's almost a part of you that goes, can I have a bit more? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or just a little bit more, because your association with hot chocolate. And then when we finally, after Jeff opens it up, and there's, you know, he takes you on a bit of a journey first, mm-hmm. right? And then finally now we're gonna drink mother cacao, and you have a sip, and then you see the faces, because it's
bitter.
She's bitter.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Mm,
quite something.
Amazing.
That, yeah. So if you're going to a cacao ceremony, it is bitter, and but bittersweet in a way. And yeah. I'm sure it'll be an amazing experience, especially if Jeff's holding it for you.
Yeah. Go, Jeff.
Go, Jeff. Much love, Kate. Should we have a
Thank
hug?
Thank you so much.
Should we have a hug? Come on, let's hug. Yay. Great having you here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Been my brother.
Let's go decaf, baby. As always, I hope you enjoyed today's conversation. If you feel drawn to do so, then please subscribe to the show, leave a review, and don't forget to share. Sharing is caring. It really helps me to help others. If you're drawn to immersing yourself in any of the NatLife experiences, or see yourself as a NatLife coach, head to tonyriddle.com for details of how to immerse yourself in the community. You can follow my adventures on Instagram at TheNaturalLifestylist. Big shout out to Simon from We Are The Clarks for producing, filming, editing. Much love.